This episode is brought to you by PwC. When unprecedented times are all the time, it's time to start walking the talk. Leaders like you turn to PwC to see and stay ahead. Upskill your workforce, use intelligent automation, and transform big ideas into breakthrough reinvention. Explore the human-led, tech-powered solutions that help you reinvent. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at pwc.com.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 podcast.
Now we're live. We welcome all of you back, and we will continue here with more of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. A guest coming up shortly about an important legal case that could affect college athletics. Where have you heard that one before? And let's continue here in Gooch. Gooch is in Mississippi.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, Gooch.
Our man's call was fantastic. I never heard a penny joke in my life like that.
That was epic.
Yeah, I was going to say, okay, all right, here's your Memphis conversation here real quick.
Okay.
You remember Rock 103 had that crew in the morning, and they used to call this group out there in somewhere on Shelby Drive, big trailer park out there. There was 500 people had the same phone number.
In the trailer park?
Yeah, they were called Costellos, travelers. They're gypsies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're travelers and gypsies.
Gypsies, tramps.
They go around.
Do it for the people.
That's exactly what Ross Bjork is. That's exactly what Ross Bjork is.
Ross Bjork is a what?
He should be part of their family. When he came here from West Virginia to Oxford, he brought his whole damn family, in-laws, grandmamas, aunts, uncles, brothers, and put them all on the damn university, payroll.
Did he really? I didn't know
that. I guess they're all out there at A&M now. I guess they got them all at A&M now.
I didn't know Ross did that.
Oh, he did. Yeah, he bought his in-laws, his sister-in-law.
Well, by the way, I don't mean to...
Everything. First of all,
there's nothing wrong with bringing your family. I think there are some nepotism laws in Mississippi, are there not?
Apparently, they're not at Ole Miss Can you tell me who runs Ole Miss, Paul? Do you know who the president or who the CEO is? Who actually makes the decisions?
No, I don't.
You can't tell me that because I don't know anybody that does. I got three friends on the board of trustees, and they can't tell me who runs the damn place.
No, I don't know who runs. I used to know who was the old chancellor. Right, I knew Kayat. I liked him.
I like Robert too. I love him. We're good friends. But he's old. He's lost.
Yeah, no, I was down there a couple years ago, and I was doing a story on John Grisham. I was hanging around with Grisham all day, and Dr. Kayat came by. We had a great guy. But you're right. He does not. He's no longer running the show. I don't know who runs Ole Miss.
Okay, well, let's get off of that. What do you think about the Rebels' chances in baseball?
Quite good. I think they are in a great spot. And it's just, I mean, you live there. I'm just a fan from afar. But if they pull this off, it's going to be one of the great turnarounds of all time.
Oh, it would be. But, everybody's spent all their pitching at this point, but they could get out of this tonight.
Yeah, but remember this, and we're watching A&M now struggle a little bit. I mean, if they win tonight, they'll be the freshest team out there.
Well, if you get a chance, go back and get on YouTube and pull up that YouTube about Rock 103, Bad Dog.
Okay, I will.
And Tim, and talking about the Costellos out there.
Yeah, I'll do that. And if I go to that YouTube page and I see Ross Bjork, I'm calling you immediately.
No, he's not on there. I'm
okay.
Just saying. That's the kind of person he is.
I hear you.
Like a gypsy. And, do you think that's even – I mean, that's the kind of guy he was. He sold us out completely over damn Hugh Freeze. And, you know, but, you know, we ain't got much butter, but we got a discount on Keith Carter. So at least he loves Ole Miss.
Yeah, he played there, so he's a little bit I really don't.
The best thing. Yeah, but he's not a businessman.
Well, yeah.
But anyway, thank you, Paul.
Okay, thank you very much, Gooch. Gooch obviously knows the ins and the outs of Oxford, Mississippi, does he not? A lot of these things I just don't know. How about Trey in Arkansas? Hello, Trey.
Howdy, Paul.
Howdy.
I'm going to answer your Twitter question, and I have a question.
Okay, sure.
The college football moment that I'd relive would be the Mississippi Miracle when Arkansas went into overtime with Ole Miss.
Oh, wow. That was quite a game.
And then who would you take, Sam Pittman or Mike Leach?
I would take Sam Pittman. I think he's today is a better overall coach. I think Mike Leach is a phenomenal coordinator and play caller, but I think his. I don't think he compares to Sam Pittman in relation to being a great recruiter and an overall CEO. I would take Pittman hands down. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it, Ron, in Virginia Beach. Good afternoon.
Paul, it is a great honor to be on your show again, as always.
Thank you.
And you're welcome, sir. And the reason why I'm calling is, you know, I wanted to talk about one of the greatest college football games played in history. And I checked, and I'm not saying you're old, Paul. You're 2 years and 4 months older than me, and the reason why I checked, because I know you've seen this game.
Okay, which game is it?
It's when Alabama had back-to-back national championship games in 78 and 79.
Right.
And I watched live. I was going to see if you saw this. It was at the Sugar Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
And it was Woody Hayes and Bear Bryant. And Bear Bryant just sat there and didn't say anything. It was Woody Hayes this, Woody Hayes that, Ohio State this, and Ohio State that. And you know what the end result was?
It was about a four-touchdown game, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was 37-17. And in my opinion, Paul, I asked Daddy, because, you know, I was just 19 years old at the time. I said, who are they? Because I didn't know who the SEC was at that time. I know now. And he said, they're good. And that's, in my opinion, when the SEC changed college football. That's when everybody knew it was an evolution to them being good. And it's just the fact that Coach Bear Bryant, a lot of people overlook him. And I noticed you were talking to somebody from Madison, Alabama. I lived there for 23 years. And I watched Mal Moore on Channel 31 News talk about Bear Bryant. And he was the athletic director at Alabama for 50 years, if I'm correct, Paul. And he said Coach Bryant changed the game of college football what it is today. What do you think about that?
Well, I think he certainly is one of the most important and influential people. And thank you for the call. I think I'd have to read more of what Coach Moore said because, you know, Bryant was part of two different eras. He was part of that era in the 50s and 60s, and then he made the changes that moved into the more modern era, where you know, you didn't have one race alone playing football in the South, and he adjusted quite well. I mean, what people miss about Paul Bryant is that there were whispers about his demise in the late 60s. He went through a tough period. A lot of reasons for it. You know, Vietnam could have been part of it. There were other reasons. And one of the biggest, he didn't have any black players. And when he finally made that change, and then he changed the offense. Everyone knows the wishbone story. And he had the best decade of his career. We'll take a short break. We appreciate you being here, and we are back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we are back. Steve is up next in Kentucky. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Paul. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
I just want to say that I think Levin's for Kentucky's quarterback is way underrated. And I think a lot of people will go through havoc going through Lexington, Kentucky this year. And I don't know your thoughts about that. I just think it was he's way underrated. I think I saw where he's like seventh. And but anyway, to make a long story short, also I would like to confirm that after listening to the Alabama fans, I confirm that there is definitely some inbreeding going on in Alabama. But anyway, I'm just joking. But anyway, you have a good day, and thank you.
Joe is up next in Oakland. Hello, Joe. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Thank
I was
you.
Just calling in about my favorite football moment.
Sure, absolutely.
I was born and raised in Jackson, Mississippi, and my favorite football moment certainly the most memorable was Billy Cannon's Halloween night run in 1959 against Ole Miss.
I would say, Joe, that and this is unscientific, but I think because it was on Halloween night, I'm just not sure, just from a pure theater and drama standpoint, anything can top that.
Well, it certainly didn't in my book, and I went from being not interested at all in football until about 20 minutes before that game. I was a baseball fan, but not a football fan. My buddies and I, we were all in the seventh grade, met at a street corner by prearrangement, and most of them were carrying these little transistor radios that had only been on the market for a very short time. And they were all tuned into the game. So I kind of just heard some of the game as I was walking with them. And we wound up over at a friend's house right before halftime, and his mother was listening to the game on an old wooden table radio. At halftime, the rest of my friends went into the one kid's bedroom there to pull out board games. I was so captivated by that crowd noise that I stayed right where I was, and I listened to that broadcast all the way through halftime just to hear the crowd.
No, Joe, I don't want to go old school here, but I will. There's something quite dramatic about sitting with a transistor radio or one of those old Philco clock radios, whatever they were, that we used to gather around And, you know, television is amazing. We all know that. But you remember the sounds. You remember every single thing about it. And there's no distractions. It's not like you're watching the game. You have another TV over here. You've got your iPad in front of you and your phone in your hand. I mean, all you're doing is listening to the words and closing your eyes and trying to imagine when the announcer goes, and LSU is moving right to left. You know, you go, oh, I mean, it's pretty
exactly.
amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was an amazing medium, and it was the only way we had to hear the game.
Yeah, I remember I lived briefly in Louisiana, and I interviewed Billy Cannon. This was before his problems. And he never, I think he told me, and this was 25, 30 years later, he never went 5 feet in that state without ever talking about that game. And if I remember correctly, LSU may have been number one in the country. They lost the next week.
Tennessee.
Yeah,
to
exactly.
Tennessee.
Exactly.
Tennessee stopped Cannon on a 2-point conversion play right near the end of the game and won 14-12.
I did well, obviously.
And that snapped about an 18 or 19 game winning streak because LSU had won the Natty in 58.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Well, that that's
years
amazing.
In a row,
that's amazing.
58 and 59, both Ole Miss and LSU were undefeated going into their game with each other.
That game, I would say, and I know it's an important game today, but in my year of covering LSU football, that was the most important game. Alabama was always a big game for LSU because of the obvious. Bryant was during my time and later Saban and everyone else. But Ole Miss was the game that you measured yourself by.
That's right. That's right. And that was in a time period when LSU didn't play Alabama every year.
Well, I'll tell you a game. You said you grew up in Jackson, Mississippi?
Yes.
I'm not saying it's the most memorable because I've seen a few, but I would say that in the first half of my career, the most memorable moment I have ever witnessed occurred in the stadium. I think it's Mississippi Memorial Stadium in Jackson, and you may remember this one. You may have already been gone, but it was when Mississippi State stopped Alabama on the goal line while they were number one in the country, going for a three-peat with a 28-game winning streak. And they stopped him. The quarterback was Don Jacobs. I think he fumbled the ball on the 1 or 2 yard line, and that was the end of the game. And they lost 6-3.
Oh, that was when Emory Ballard was coaching.
Yes,
State,
absolutely.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I had
1980?
Never. Yeah, it was my first year covering Alabama. I was standing about 5 yards from Mal Moore and Coach Bryant, and I was watching them as they were sending in the play. And I asked Mal this once, and he didn't answer me. It looked like they never got the play in because nobody could hear. They were doing hand signals, and Jacobs looked over, and Mal was trying to. I don't think Coach Bryant ever answered him, as if to say, "Mal, you call the play. You're the offensive coordinator." And somebody can dispute this because I really don't know if I've ever talked to John Jacobs about it, but I'm not sure they ever got the right play in.
Well, Emory Ballard, I remember saying the next day I saw it on the coverage. I was already out here, but I certainly knew about the game. And Emory Ballard said the next day, how highly he regarded Coach Bryant, because he said after the game, Coach Bryant came over into the Mississippi State locker room, congratulated the Bulldog players, and said, "You whipped us."
Yeah, no, I was outside that locker room. He sure did. I was outside the locker room as a Cub reporter, I didn't think I would ever see anything more dramatic than that in my entire career. I saw a few things that rivaled it, but that was an amazing moment.
Certainly one of the biggest wins in Mississippi State's football history.
Absolutely. Alabama, I think they ended up losing either the next week or the following week to Notre Dame anyway. It just crushed. A 28-game winning streak in college football is pretty amazing.
Oh, it still is. Absolutely.
I mean, not if you're Oklahoma
Absolutely.
With Bud Wilkinson, but it's pretty cool. What a great pleasure to hear from you.
Well, same here. I enjoy your show every day.
Well, thank you very much. What great memory. Yeah, this is I know there are things going on, but it's the transistor radio. I remember somebody told me once that he went to Coach Bryant's house on a Saturday night after a game. Like, all the players came over and everybody, and they couldn't find Coach Bryant. And he was literally sitting on the patio with one of those transistor radios listening to the LSU game. I mean, that's I know you young kids and teenagers, you're probably laughing at us as we laughed at our parents and grandparents, but that's the way it was. Let's continue, and John is up next. Good afternoon, John.
Hey, Paul, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
You talked about the late 60s with Coach Bryant. I was 8 or 9 back then. One name comes to mind as a big part of the problem. That was Scott Hunter.
Right.
But the favorite football memory for me is I was a freshman at Alabama, and my father told me, he said, you take my tickets to Baton Rouge. When Alabama goes to Baton Rouge, you take my tickets. You need to experience it. And I don't know if you remember that year, we beat LSU 3-0 in the rain.
Right.
I think LSU crossed the 50 one time.
Exactly.
Stedman Chile was a quarterback. He spent the night in the hospital. There was another guy spent the night in the hospital.
Sure did.
And if I heard this once going down there, I heard it 1,000 times. Oh, it never rains in Tiger Stadium.
that's what they
and
say.
It poured all night. Yeah. I do want to say one thing. I didn't do anything on Father's Day except for, you know, watch some of the golf tournament. But whoever at ESPN put together that series, Saturdays in the South.
Right, right.
That they need to win an award. That is phenomenal.
Yeah, they did that for about 3 or 4 years ago. It was great. No, I saw one or two of those episodes over the weekend.
Every episode.
It's pretty amazing. I would agree.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. Roll yeah, path. I must say I don't remember the guy's name because I sat down and was interviewed for it. But they really did capture the essence of the SEC brilliantly. Let's continue with RJ in Birmingham. Hello, RJ.
Thanks a lot, Paul, for taking
Thank
my
you.
Call.
Thank you.
First off, I just want to tell you how much I appreciate your show and your dedication to letting the audience speak.
Thank you.
And be a primary content provider. Worked in radio on a local and global level for many years, and I just think you do a fantastic job with your show.
Thank you very much.
Nevertheless, moving forward to my favorite football memory, 10 years old in 1988, most of my life living in Birmingham, Alabama, and having a cousin that played for Alabama with Bear Bryant. All I knew was Alabama, but I had an uncle who went to the Sugar Bowl in 1988. And I sat at home and watched it with my grandfather. And my grandfather and I sat there and pulled for the tie because we knew that nothing would be better than sending home a bunch of New Yorkers pissed off from New Orleans. So we had a fantastic time. And from then on, I became an Auburn fan and, you know, kind of became a microcosm of the Auburn universe in a sense of, it kind of prepared me for a lifetime of strange happenstances and mixed emotions as a fan. But War Eagle, we appreciate your show.
RJ, thank you very, very much. Nice of you to call. And that voice gave your vocation away. We'll take a short break. We are back with much more.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And welcome back. It is good to be here, and it's always great to welcome Michael McCann, the legal expert on all things sports-related, a lot happening in that platform. And there was this piece in Sportico the other day about the SEC filing an amicus brief in the Johnson versus NCAA case, which is interesting on one level because it involves schools far to the north and east of the SEC, but the bigger picture may become crystal clear. We say hello to Michael. Michael, I know you've had a busy day. There's a lot happening in D.C. and elsewhere, and we'll get to that in a second. But before we get too deep, and I know we've discussed this in the past, but can you give us a quick primer on this Johnson versus NCAA case? Because before we get to the NCAA portion, I want to make sure the audience understands what it's about. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul, and thanks for having me back on. So the basic gist of this case is that if student workers at games and in the library are being paid a wage, usually minimum wage, then why aren't college athletes, their classmates, paid as well? So this case is about trying to create equality in the sense of students in college, if their work study and they get paid a wage, 20 hours a week, 15 hours a week, whatever it is, then college athletes, who under NCAA rules are generally capped at 20 hours a week, they too should get paid that. And that's really what this case is about. It's under the Fair Labor Standards Act. It's not about players unionizing. It's not about players getting health care rights. It's really, if you think back to college, student workers, paying them like that. And that's the gist of this case.
And the Third Circuit primarily is Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware, nowhere near where we are in the South. But that's not the overriding factor here. So explain to us the SEC's involvement and what's really at stake.
Yeah, the SEC filed a brief, and so did a group of education associations. They're worried that if college athletes are declared employees under the FLSA in the Third Circuit, then that would lead to a conflict of law between other circuits that have looked at this issue and the Third Circuit, which would create some sort of chaos, you might say, although the plaintiffs would say, well, just pay them a wage like their classmates and everything would be okay. The SEC and the education associations have argued that if you look at how other courts have looked at this, they've rejected it, that the Department of Labor manual, there's a handbook that implies that college athletes can't be employees, although there's debate about that. So that's their stake, is that they believe that this would be a game changer. And both briefs highlight what they say are the economic realities of this, that most colleges lose money on college sports. Now, the counter argument is, of course, colleges make a lot of money through admissions, through fundraising, through alumni stuff, through sports. So it's not necessarily an accounting equation, but that's their stake in this, and that's their worry.
So let's look ahead. These things don't often move quickly, but they are important to watch. What is the timetable, and what's at stake?
Yeah, the timetable on this is the Third Circuit at some point, probably this year, will consider the question that's on appeal, which is whether or not the district court judge used the correct standard in rejecting the NCAA's argument. So if the Third Circuit sides with the players, it would be a pretty game-changing moment in terms of a federal appeals court saying, yeah, they are, based on what they can tell, employees, just like their classmates. And at that point, I would imagine the NCAA would petition the Supreme Court to review this, because the NCAA would say, well, look, these other circuits rejected that. And then we could get maybe a Supreme Court case if they took it. And I think they might, because this would be pretty far-reaching in impact. But to your question, Paul, this is not going to be resolved anytime soon. But it's yet another worry, I think, for the NCAA and some schools, whereas the opposite view, where players would say, and advocates for athletes would say, this is doing them right. So, you know, there's a lot going on in this space, and it's really interesting to follow.
So I know it's easy to have everything that we talk about daily bleed into one when we're in the legal realm, which I know isn't the way it works. But assuming this goes to the Supreme Court, and assuming that the trend lines remain the same for the NCAA, which is unfair because every case is different, but still their track record has been abysmal, ultimately, what could it mean?
Well, they could lose. I think that's got to be the worry for the NCAA. They obviously lost 9-0 in the Alston case, although the NCAA might say, well, we lost 9-0, but that case wasn't about athletics. It was about education-related benefits. And although Justice Kavanaugh wrote a far-reaching concurring opinion where he described the NCAA as a cartel, he was the only justice that signed on to that. So we don't know what the justices would do in a case like this. But given their track record lately, I can't imagine they want to take a chance. And maybe they don't petition the Supreme Court. They petitioned the Supreme Court in Alston, I'm sure, thinking, well, the Supreme Court's conservative. They're going to go with us. But I think they misunderstood what conservative means. Conservative can mean traditionalist or it can mean libertarian. And the justices clearly took the view that the NCAA is constraining competition by preventing athletes from being paid. So it backfired.
The NCAA is undergoing a great deal of upheaval. We have this transformation committee about to unveil certain new standards. There's a hunt, allegedly, for a new NCAA president. I know that those things happen on one side, but does it or does it not affect their legal strategy in the future?
Oh, I think it definitely affects their legal strategy, Paul. And I think it affects because they have to decide, for one, which firms are going to represent them. Have the firms that they've been using, are they satisfied with the strategy that they've gotten? Secondly, I think they have to think about the trend lines. Like you mentioned, the trend lines are not good. The trend lines suggest that there are transformations ahead. Maybe not this month, maybe not this year, but over the next several years, there are a variety of ways in which college athletes could get the chance to be paid much more than NIL, paid some sort of compensation for their labor. And I have to think the NCAA has to make a calculation to say, do we want to keep defending this and sort of having a slow death on this issue, or do we want to tackle it? Do we want to change our rules? Maybe conferences should have a lot more autonomy on this. Maybe what makes sense for the SEC is very different from a smaller conference, and letting conferences come up with amateurism rules that are much more in line with their economics.
Well said. Michael, thank you, as always. We could talk to you about so many other issues, but we wanted to get your thoughts on that. We will talk to you hopefully very soon. You be well.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you very much. So Michael McCann, nobody better on this subject or any other legal sports subject. We are heading to the break. More of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We continue here, and let's talk to Daryl in Georgia. Hello, Daryl.
Hey, Paul. I heard Coach Tony yesterday. I think he's dead on as far as what he said as far as the East goes. I mean, Tennessee is just going to end up finishing second in the East, I think in front of Kentucky. With Georgia, of course, winning the East. And then over in the West, I would go, well, definitely Bama, and then it's either going to be A&M or Ole Miss, I think. Finishing second. But hey, there's rumor down here, poor Coach Harsin at Auburn, okay? There's rumor down here that Auburn could be going after Urban Meyer if things don't work out with Harsin. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, since considering it started right here on the show yesterday afternoon with Matt Hayes.
Oh, okay. I missed that part of it. But I didn't miss the part yesterday, Paul, where you had that guy call in wanting to know if I've ever been to a Georgia game. And if Red Dogs ever been to Georgia, my first Georgia game was 1982. It was in Jordan-Hare Stadium. It was for the SEC title with Herschel Walker playing for Georgia, Bo right. Jackson playing for Auburn. I've been to a lot of Georgia games. You know what? I have no issue with a fan. I don't care how much of a fanatic they are, okay? What I do have an issue is those little snooty people that walk around with a little polo Georgia shirts on that think they're better than everybody else. I have a big issue with them, okay? You don't know who I am, okay? He has no idea who I am. Come on here and judge me. I mean, I served 6 years in the United States Marine Corps in the most damn decorated regiment and got the ribbons and the damn medals to prove it, in combat. I would like to see him in combat. I would like to see how he responds when in a firefight, okay? I would like to see how he responds when he looks over and sees one of his Marines that's dead, okay? That punk, that little boy, I tell you what, and hey, Paul, me and my stepfather for the last God knows how many years, we have each donated $5,000 a year, $10,000 total, donated it to the University of Georgia football program. And I'm pretty sure Red Dog's family does it also because they own a business, a pretty good-sized business there in Gainesville. So that's what I am. But for that guy to come on here and want to talk about people that he don't even know.
By the way, what group were you? What unit did you serve in the Marines?
I served in 2nd Battalion, 5th Marines, the most decorated regiment, the most decorated battalion in the history of the Marine Corps.
Well, I knew you had been in the Marines. I did not realize that. That's very impressive. And on behalf of
I had a friend. I had a friend. Okay, a comrade that went in and found the sniper and killed him. Okay, took him out. Come back, was running ammo about 90 meters, feeding this ammo in the firefight, and ended up hitting him with an RPG, killed him, okay? He ended up getting the Silver Star, which is the second highest award you can get in combat under the Medal of Honor, okay? So that guy has no idea who he's talking to or what he's talking about. But walk in my shoes and then, you know, don't come here and judge me. I pay my dues in this country. What in the hell has he done? See you, Paul.
Thank you, Daryl. I mean, that pretty impressive call, wouldn't you say, Rain? I mean, I'm impressed. And Daryl, we do thank you for your service.
I'm
very, very deeply indebted for your service.
And the 4th of July is coming up.
Save it. Randy's just dressed in a flag. Come on. We got another 2 weeks for that. Eddie is up next. Hello, Eddie.
How are you, Paul? Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I had just flipped over to your program, and I was listening. You were talking about the Alabama-Mississippi State game where they lost 6-3. I did not know that Don Jacobs had fumbled in that game. But the very next week, Alabama entertained Notre Dame in Birmingham.
Right. They sure did.
And Bama lost to them 7-0. But in that game, Notre Dame got down to the goal line. They fumbled. Bama recovered. And Don Jacobs fumbled right back to Notre Dame, and on the next play they scored, and that was the only points in the game. So there were two straight weeks where Don James had a hand in Bama losing the ball game.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Now, again, it's only been 42 years. I don't remember whether he was handing off and missed the handoff or I do not remember. I'll look it up. But I do remember it was Don Jacobs.
I'm thinking he fumbled the snap, but I could be wrong, Paul.
You may be right. My position on the sidelines wasn't particularly good, being with about 300 people, including the Alabama team.
Well, Paul, if I could add one more thing. In that game, Peter Kim missed, I think, a 37-yard field goal.
Oh, I didn't realize
that. Had he made that, Notre Dame's 4 victories over Alabama would have been by 1 point, 2 points, 3 points, and 4 points.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
Okay, here it is. I just looked it up as we were talking. On the final play, Jacobs took a hit from Tyrone Keyes of Mississippi State. It was a keeper, and the ball came loose, and Billy Jackson recovered for the Bulldogs with 6 seconds to go. I mean, you talk about an exciting ending to the game. That was it was my first year out covering Alabama, and it was incredibly wild to watch.
Right.
Hey,
well,
thank you.
I was wrong about that. Okay?
Well, listen, it happened in 1980. I mean, it's 40. Is that 42 years? Something like that.
Yep.
If it's not 42 years, it ought to be 42 years. Let's check out Randy in Tennessee. Hello, Randy.
Hey, Paul.
How are you?
Great. Paul, on NIL. I know it's a mess in a way, but is it any way for anybody to know, like when a player signs an NIL deal? I mean, like you talked to the gentleman there the other day, he never divulged what it was. So is it between him and who he signed it through? I mean, does the school have to get involved and the coaches?
Well, the school better know. Yeah, the school has a compliance office that is going to keep up with all that. They're not directly in the exchange, but you have to file papers to make sure the school is aware. And yeah, so but the public, unless somebody makes it public, we are not going to know. We will take a break. We'll have the Ring of Honor revelation. We'll also give you an update on the Oklahoma-Texas A&M game, which has now gone final.